Welcome to the Friends with Opinions podcast, episode 13. Today I'm joined by good friend Sanjay Sarkar. He's a Edmonton Oilers season ticket holder and lifelong diehard Oilers fan and owner of, he's a man cave aficionado as well. So we're going to talk about mostly the Oilers management and the Battle of Alberta last night and the playoff race and coming up on the trade deadline as well. So hope you enjoy. Hey, Sanjay, how's it going, buddy?
Good, Ahmed. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for coming on the pod. We're talking Edmonton Oilers deep dive here. I think you're the perfect person to come on because I think you have a lot of strong emotions. You're a diehard Oilers fan. off the hop, I guess, recording on a Sunday here on January 20th, last night. Flames. I just wanted to get your thoughts on how the game went.
I think it was the Oilers were definitely dominated in. I think if it wasn't for a couple five bell saves from Koskinen, the game could have ran away a lot sooner. Yeah. To me, it's surprising. I mean, you know, the Oilers had the luxury of seeing results earlier in the day, and none of them really went according to plan. Teams that they're battling with for those final couple playoff spots, they all won yesterday, and so, you know, you come into a game thinking, all right, we need these 2 points, and, you know, you show up after first period completely lay an egg. And, you know, I mean, they showed some jump, caught themselves back in 3-2, and they were down 3-0, but and then just couldn't close the deal and see a bad giveaway turn into the 4-2 goal.
Yeah, I think definitely the slow start has been plaguing this team for a while. And I thought Koskinen was kind of was sharp in the first period, so it wasn't really on him. He did have some Denbell saves. I mean, one of them was right before Monahan got the rebound. And, you know, like looking at that goal, I'm looking at Chris Russell, and Monahan's like all alone, just banging away. And I don't see any urgency. Like his stick is in the air. It's not like engaged. I think if Russell was engaged, like he could have gotten Monahan on that second one. So Koskinen did his part to 100%, get the first save. 100%. And Russell's just kind of lackadaisical and trying to tie up Monahan. Like it's just.
And you see that. It's that attention to detail. And you watch replays or highlights of these games, and you can just see it's the same mistakes over and over that keep plaguing this team in their own end.
Yeah.
They'll get the you know, the goalie, whether it be Talbot or Koskinen. I mean, they'll make the first save, and then guys just are not there. Like you said, they're not hungry enough there to clear a rebound, and they're giving teams a bonus second, third, fourth chance to knock it in. And I mean, these are NHL players. I mean, they're going to put that puck in.
Yeah.
a team like the Flames that are just coming in so hot. And I mean, that was the other part that was kind of disappointing about yesterday's. You know, the Flames played the night before.
The 3-4 nights.
And, you know, I mean, sure, it's just a quick 45-minute flight back up here to Edmonton from Calgary where they played Friday night. Yeah. But nonetheless, they played a game. They had to travel in. And meanwhile, the Oilers, you know, these guys sleep in the comfort of their own bed and completely come out flat. And it's been, you know, I mean, that's been kind of a theme for this team for probably the better part of a decade now is how many times have we seen, it doesn't matter what the personnel is, who the coaches are. It just seems to be a team that consistently comes out flat for big games.
Yeah. And I don't understand, because I kind of thought Hitchcock was pushing some of the right buttons when he first came in, and people seem rejuvenated. So like when they're on the hot streak and they're like, get a couple goals in a game and they have a bit of a lead, you can see it. Like, ability, you know, shows its flashes every so often, but you don't see that consistency game after game, and that's, I think, the frustrating thing. And but maybe you know, as some people say, it's like a mirage when they have those good wins. That's kind of a mirage, or, you know, Connor and Leon like carried us to the win or something.
Well, and that's just it, right? I mean, that's the part that consistency of coming out each game, like showing up. It's what separates us from the you know, the teams like the Sharks, teams like the Knights right now, even the Flames. I mean, these teams are at the top of the standings, You know, I mean, we can argue all day that they've got a much more skilled lineup, but I mean, what makes an NHL lineup more skilled than the other? Well, I mean, wins is what's going to end up, you know, making that perception be the case. And the Oilers just don't seem to wake up for games consistently. It's baffling. Like, I don't understand how professional athletes can continue to show up and half-ass it in game in, game out.
Yeah, and it's so yeah, I guess there's like a lot of different things to dissect here, but are there like certain players that kind of contribute to that? So like I'm a huge Leon Draisaitl fan, and as you know, like I kind of harp on Oilers fans who, you know, rip him because he's getting paid 8.5, and I think like we can talk about his contract as well, but one thing I do notice with him is like it is that consistency is I just some games like when he's got his jump, he can get into the zone and ward off people. There's other games where he's just kind of like slow out
Just
there. And I
coasting,
thought
yeah.
last night was one of those ones where you don't really notice him too much. And
And
I don't know, maybe it's the other team, what they're doing. But like, are there any players that in particular you can, because I feel like, but at the same time, McDavid, Draisaitl, and Nuge Hopp, it's hard to like fault those guys, right? So who else is it than the consistency?
you're right. And I mean, I guess it literally is something that just trickles through the lineup. I think the Leon example is a great one because, yeah, definitely. I mean, this guy's he's a game breaker. But the part for us is, you know, it's frustrating to see that like it's fourth or fifth game, just perception wise, it appears he just is taking a night off. I mean, he's so talented and skilled that he still gets the points. And I mean, people argue, oh, well, he's getting the points playing with McDavid. And I mean, that's fine. But you know what? McDavid still does need wingers to keep up with his speed and thought process of the game. So Leon can do that even when he's taking a night off. And it would just be unbelievable if he had that consistency to bring it every game.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I agree with a lot of points there. And like the whole note, but I like the whole notion that McDavid. Because he's playing with McDavid, that discounts his production. I just feel like that's so unfair because we have a laundry
I agree
list of
with you. I
players that have
agree
played with McDavid who have not produced at that same level as Leon, like including Nugent Hopkins. And so like there's got to be something there. And then like this notion that yeah, McDavid as great as he is, one player is gonna basically take on a whole team. I mean, sometimes
No, you
he
can't
does
do
it,
it.
right? He sometimes on those, but
Man.
like it's the NHL, right? You can't do it all the time.
No, definitely not. It's the ultimate team sport. One, your superstar is only going to be able to play a third of the game tops. I mean, in McDavid's case, he can get to upwards of 25 minutes, which is absolutely incredible at the kind of pace he plays. But yeah, I mean, it's a team sport. One guy can't get wins all the time. But you know, this year he's been doing that. I mean, his production, his gumption is what has kept us in a playoff race, even though we as a fan base have been super frustrated by a lot of games this year, winnable games that the Oilers have just pissed away. But yeah, I mean, he's done that for us. He's kept us in. But you know, I don't know if it's a cultural thing for this organization, but yeah, I mean, we're talking Leon and we're talking, you know, effort and absolutely. Like, I mean, we see that in other guys. And the part that ba is baffling with other guys, you know, coming out flat or not looking like they've got that killer instinct out there is that most of the other players on the Oilers, I mean, they're not that superstar status. Like, these are guys that be fighting for contracts. These are guys who are fighting for a place in the NHL, and they look like they just don't even care.
Yeah, and like the thing I don't
And
understand.
that's the part that's
Yeah, and
shocking.
I think the thing I think you raised a good point of like talking about is it culture type thing because what like can we explain why a guy like Ryan Strome is absolute donuts all season long? The guy cannot get a point like for the life of him. Like how is it possible that like a puck cannot ricochet off of somebody? And he passed it to somebody else, like in the defensive zone, and somehow he's credited with an assist. How is it not possible? So, like we've always seen a bit of talent flashes in the Islanders before he came here, and then he leaves, goes to the Rangers. This guy is just absolute donuts, and then all of a sudden he's like putting up points like every few games. Like he's not exactly lighting the world on fire, but you know if he's our third line center earlier in the year and he has like 6 points, 7 points in 20 games type thing, like. I'll take it, you know, instead of zero, absolutely. Right? And it seems like he's doing that in New York, but what's the problem? And I think, like, maybe it's at the core of it, and like, as even some of our other forwards, like a guy like Reeder, sure, we don't expect him to score 30 goals, but like at least 15 goals, you know, like give us something bottom of the barrel, even. But like,
hasn't even scored yet, I know.
Yeah, like it's like these guys who in their career have put up at least like 35 points, you know, like are just absolute donuts. Yeah. And I think maybe it's the puck moving defenseman might be the way to kind of look at it, like these guys who can kind of move it up. But is it the culture? Like, is it the management? Is it the city, the pressure that's involved in the city? Like, you're there, you know, I'm out in the West Coast, but what's the pulse?
And it's interesting to say that part. I think it's all like a perfect storm for players to sometimes fail here. I mean, I think players come in, and one thing is, I think management, you know, unfortunately, is in the recent past, there have been some, I guess, what have turned out to be very lopsided trades, and automatically that will boost the pressure on the lower value player coming back. Is that, oh man, I've got to fill in shoes for a 60 point player or a Hart Trophy winner, and all of a sudden now you've got this pressure on you. And I mean, it's a city that's a diehard over its hockey as well, and so all of a sudden you've got a fan base that's now trying to, you know, say, okay, well, we traded you for this. Like, we need some production out of you. Like, and the minute it's coming, you know, there's articles, there's radio shows, there's blogs now being written, just absolutely lambasting a player. And, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, I know they're all pros, but they're still all young 20-year-old kids. And it could definitely negatively affect the confidence in these players. The other part that also goes with that is, I mean, you look at our coaching staff just continues, I think, to play people in positions to fail. They don't give them the opportunities to actually go and grab the bull by the horns and run with it. I think, you know, you put a guy like Ryan Strom maybe in a position to succeed, and then, you know, after like trying it for what, two games, then all of a sudden, oh, let's change it up again. I mean, there's no real opportunity for a guy to, like, you know, settle in and like build some chemistry. Like, I feel like right now the panic button is always going on here in Edmonton, aside from the 2017 season, that, you know, the lines are being juggled every game. Mm-hmm. And I mean, how is anyone going to build any chemistry aside from, you know, the Connor Leon combo? Like, everything seems to change constantly. And it's just insane.
And I thought that changed when Hitchcock came in. Like, the first few games there, Hitchcock really, you know, he kind of stuck with the same lines for about five games there. But yeah, he's gone right back to the same thing with Todd that, like, we were complaining about. And I thought, like, you know, I was a bit happy that McClellan, you know, got moved on because of the juggling of the lines. So I thought Hitchcock would have a bit more sense. And I mean, I have a feeling in the past he wouldn't juggle as much, but he's still doing that. And like, people up and down the lineup, and
it's just, and then it makes you wonder, like, is it a coaching issue here, or is it a actual like problem at the core right at the top there? I mean, it seems like we get coaches who come in and they're guys who've got pretty good resumes from the past, and all of a sudden they're doing the same thing every other coach in Edmonton has done. And it's just, like, as a fan, like, it's just, to me, it's mind boggling. Like, I just don't understand. Like, you made a very good point. And like, Hitchcock comes in, and I think everyone was thinking, okay, we're going to be seeing a lot of Ken Hitchcock hockey now, which is, I mean, sure, it's, you know, aesthetically it's boring, but you know what, if we get wins, it's great. And we were getting the wins. There was consistent lineup change, consistent lines that were playing game in, game out. And you know, then they hit a bit of a rough patch and went on the 1-6 run, I think, after the torrid start they had to Hitchcock's time here. And all of a sudden now it's just, the lines have hit the blender every two games. And it's something, like you said, it's very uncharacteristic, I think, of Hitchcock's past coaching experience. We've never really known him to be a coach like that. But is it an Edmonton thing then? Is it an Oilers thing?
I think we've talked at length about this together, and it's just, I think it is at the core, and we have to start looking. And I know everyone wants to point to you know, the boys on the bus and the management and the Kevin Lowe's, and then obviously Shirelli, you know, we can talk about as well. But I think it comes down to the core, like of Kate's, the owner, you know, like 100%. Basically, like, we have to look at when did this guy become owner, and then what's been the track record? Like, this 12 years of darkness has been his entire, like, tenure. Like, this is not, like, just all of a sudden happened. So, and I mean, you know, I think his pharmacies that he ran were pretty crap, but maybe that's a whole other genre of podcast. But I think this guy is in it to just milk the money. And I don't know. Maybe, I thought, like, I do think, like, the tank method to get high picks is a good way to go. But the problem is they didn't do it right because, A, they didn't hit on their top picks. And then B, like, they didn't hit on any, like, second, third, fourth round guys. But he's the guy empowering all these people, right? So I think it starts with him, and we can, like, work our way down. But it starts with him.
It 100% starts with him. I mean, you look at some of the consistent bodies that are still, like, at the in the positions of power. I mean, how in any business – are these people still in power with the kind of track record the Oilers have shown? I mean, you know, whether we want to call, I mean, down to Kevin Lowe, Craig McTavish, like, these guys are the poster boys for this failed decade. You know, they continue to be the guys at the helm. They continue to be the guys. I mean, sure, they get promoted and put into positions where they're considered to not be in hockey ops, but I mean, they're still there. Their stamp is still left on the team, on the decisions. And,
like, do they hide the fact that, like, I was reading somewhere that, like, Shirelli's decision making and the moves he's been making, I'm not trying to absolve Shirelli at all, but is this decision making is a collapse? All those guys that are in the head office, McTavish, Gretzky, Bob Nicholson, like, they're all kind of, and Cates maybe as well, maybe Harry Cates is in the boardroom at the same time. I wouldn't be surprised. And they're all kind of collaboratively coming along. And it's like, are these guys all best suited for this decision making? And clearly they're not getting the job. Maybe they changed Shirelli right now. Maybe the same moves will be made, right? Like, maybe that the whole Reinhardt deal. Yeah. And, like, Cates, like, I don't know, like, just because he has a history of making money doesn't mean he has a history of, like, knowing how to run an organization to provide a good product on the ice. I mean, as a Oilers season ticket holder, do you feel like the product that you're being given for is improved under Cates watched, or, like,
absolutely not? Absolutely not. I mean,
it's totally destroyed.
It's actually gotten. I mean, it's the funny thing is before Cates, I mean, we as a fan, you were always, you know, when Daryl Cates bought the team, I think as a fan, there was a lot of excitement. It's like, wow, finally we have, like, one solid owner with deep pockets and not this 30 man ownership group that, like, can't make a decision and, you know, continues to, like, bicker and fight with each other. But, you know, the thing is, we had under the 30 man ownership group, like, the Oilers teams, like, sure, they didn't have a great ton of skill in those days, but, man, they were entertaining to watch. Like, these guys came and they brought it every game.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, they would scratch and claw their way into playoff spots. And, I mean, obviously they would be completely outmatched by the upper teams that could spend all the way to kingdom come. But Daryl Cates comes in and all of a sudden, like, we've just been watching this, like, absolutely diminishing product. And I mean, if it wasn't for winning the 2015 draft lottery, I can tell you, I think a lot of people were really on the cusp of dropping their tickets and getting rid of them, because the product that you were just watching out there, game in, game out, as we've talked about, this team comes out so flat. It looks like it has. I mean, these are young guys playing, and they look like they're gasping for air after, like, a couple shifts. Like, I don't get it. And yeah, I mean, absolutely, I agree with you. I think it all starts at the top, and I mean, no one holds anyone accountable. I mean, people, you can rip on Shirelli all you want, but at the end of the day, it's Bob Nicholson is at fault for not handling the Shirelli, you know, employment. Let's say, I mean, he's incompetent because he won't fire him. Then you go to Cates. Cates is completely incompetent because he won't get rid of Nicholson or Lowe or Mac T. He just has all these guys on his payroll to be his buddy up there. That's literally the perception is our owner is sitting there paying guys from the 80s glory days just to be his friend.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Yeah, Cates has definitely diminished the product. And on top of, you know, it's a beautiful arena, but going to the city of Edmonton, the taxpayers, and asking them to fork over all this money so that for his arena, and he's going to keep all the revenue. You'd think, like, okay, if you're going to ask for that, then you especially have to provide a team that's going to be competitive year after year.
Absolutely.
And, like, kind of going to down Absolutely. To the next head of the snake, Bob Nicholson, you mentioned his name. Like, I don't understand why this guy has credentials. Like, as far as I'm concerned, Sam, like, if you have success with Team Canada, you do not deserve any credit whatsoever. Like, maybe the players, Absolutely. Like, you know, they stepped Absolutely. Up in the moment, best on best, you could say. But the coaching staff has, like, yep. three top-level NHL head coaches on the bench. The general managers, you have, like, three, four, five general managers from around the NHL contributing. What is Bob Nicholson doing? I don't understand. You have a bevy of the greatest hockey players on earth in Team Canada. You could, like, there's multiple different combinations of ways that you can win the gold medal. Like, you basically just have to not yep. fuck it up. So then we're going to the well of Hockey Canada all the time, like, as though that's some sort of, like, credential that proves that you can win in the NHL. Like, this is a totally different
ballgame. I cannot agree with you more.
Dealing with, like, you know, amateur sports and youth sports in Canada is a very important job. I think it's very important. But what does it have to do with running an NHL franchise? So I think that Absolutely Bob Nicholson, like, has all this cred because of Hockey Canada. Yep. Nobody questions it. Because obviously nobody, I'm not going to try to disparage Hockey Canada, but it's like you're working with a pretty good set of circumstances here, right?
Well, for sure. Because, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're talking the World Juniors level or you're talking now the Olympic level. The thing is, Canada is always going to field a team that should win. It should win. I mean, in the country here, when we don't win junior gold, like it's wow, it's a travesty. Like, how did this happen? But I mean, yeah, absolutely. Like, how this guy has so much cred it makes no sense to me. Because I mean, I honestly, like, again, not to disparage Hockey Canada, but I think you could literally put anyone in that role, and I mean, Hockey Canada would just continue to roll along. And I mean, they'd win Olympic golds, they'll win World Junior titles because of the grassroots program that's there. And maybe Nicholson had a hand in that. Sure, fair enough. But I mean, that was like 25 years ago. Like, I'm sorry, but the business, the model of it has completely changed. And absolutely what you said. I mean, Hockey Canada is one thing, but running an NHL franchise and keeping it competitive is something totally different. You don't have a team of all-stars.
Our nations that can have yeah. a chance to win gold anytime. And you have a pool of hockey players that are, like, super elite because of just the culture in Canada. I mean, obviously Hockey Canada absolutely. Plays a part for sure. And, you know, grateful for the work they do. In this country, but like for one man to show, and let's say theoretically, Sanch, that he does deserve credit, that he, you know, somehow put together the exact combination of management and coaches for Team Canada and to get a gold, because they did perform really well. But to assume that that's going to translate to the NHL when you're one out of 31 teams, soon to be one out of 32 teams, yeah. and you don't have the selection of hockey player pool that you have with Hockey Canada, it's just not even close to being a guarantee that you're gonna be good. If anything, like, he's maybe more biased towards Canadian hockey players because he's well, I've seen them more, and that might not always be like the best assessment, right? So,
absolutely agree. I mean, yeah. my thing is right now, if you look at this management group, the fact of the matter is the results that the Oilers have been throwing out for the last, let's just say, the last 2 years, even. All right, like, I mean, I say that because, you know, I'm counting the years now we've got a generational talent.
Yeah.
If we now do that comparison to other teams that got their generational talent. So, I mean, you look at the Washington Capitals, you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, the very first years they had Crosby come in and Ovechkin come in. Yes, they missed the playoffs. I mean, they were still a team building that foundation up now around their generational talented player.
Yeah.
Now, since then, though, after missing one season, these teams have been playoff teams, and if not playoff teams, contenders pretty much every season.
Yeah.
We look at the Oilers, and okay, yeah, you know what? I don't think anyone thought in McDavid's first year that the Oilers were going to go for the playoffs. Fine. Year two, hey, they get in there, and they were actually had what I would say, it was a pretty dominant season. Mm-hmm. But since then, you know, going into that year, there were a lot of moves made, And I mean, bold moves. You know, they were some controversial trades,
bold moves?
Controversial player movements, bold moves. Yes, the old McTavish bold moves.
Yeah,
and so these were moves that management hitched their wagon to, and was like, yeah, this is what we're going to stand with and go and move along with. And you know, 2 years down the road here, I mean, last year was a disaster of a season. This year. This is it's a subpar season for sure. I mean, they might squeak into the playoffs. Yeah, great. But I mean, are they a team that is built and is as powerful as they should be by having a guy like Connor McDavid on it? Absolutely not. And for me, that's a complete injustice to the fans. And also, like, it shows just how incompetent management is, and they should be held accountable to that. But and that's the thing we see here in Edmonton. No, no one ever is.
Yeah,
no one's held accountable. Everyone either just continues on in their positions or they're promoted, and it's just, it's absolutely insane.
I could totally see, though, Chiarelli leaving and then they go and hire somebody else. And I mean, I think we both
Or they would just do it from within, right? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, do they just promote a guy in from within? Yeah. Like, is McTavish become our next general manager, or do they go to Keith Gretzky? And my issue with that is, like, are you kidding me? Are you telling me that Chiarelli has made these decisions all on his own? I highly doubt it. I can guarantee you there's been input from most of those people on that management team that have either been like, yeah, no, let's it's good way to go. Let's do that. I can't see this being one man making the call.
Yeah, and so from, like, in Edmonton, do you think among the fans, like, is the situation that – so a couple of things, like, then kind of talking about the boys on the bus there. I mean, part of it for me is, like, I wonder, and I don't necessarily think this is true, but does Cates think that in order to get management-type people that have the cred and the history in hockey, that some of these boys on the bus type guys, that to come and live in Edmonton, that they have to go to that well. They need those people because they can't attract, you know, the management types to come to Edmonton. Like, I don't think that's true because, like, you know, it's the NHL, right? Yeah, if you can get a job in the NHL. But is that part of it? And then the other part is, Hey, Sanj. Yeah, so just kind of finishing up, we got cut off there. Yeah, so do you think the fans have a loyalty to the boys on the bus and actually, like, don't want to see them go?
Fans, no. I think the fans are pretty tired of the boys on the bus. I think, you know, it's a great history that the Oilers have had there back, you know, 30 years ago. But 30 years ago, I think people are sick and tired of the boys on the bus reference, the stamp that the influence that these guys still have on this team. Because, yeah, these guys were great players back in a day. But, I mean, do they have what it takes to make these hockey management personnel decisions? They've been given a pretty fair shake to do it, and the results speak for themselves that it really doesn't hasn't panned out. So no, I don't think there's any loyalty to it at all from overall fan stance.
Yeah, and do you think, like, you know, we could attract the thing to Edmonton?
I think you can. You know, at the end of the day, people, whether they be players during free agency or management individuals, they want to know that if they're going to come to an organization, that they're coming for the reasons of, like, you know, success, winning. And the reason, I think the biggest reason why people don't want to come around here, right, is, I mean, the team doesn't win. You know, you have a superstar player, and people are already talking about in his fourth year of, oh man, this doesn't turn around. He's going to demand a trade out. And I mean, what kind of environment is that? I mean, people don't want to come into that. And then if you're on the management side, do you really want to come in and be intertwined with these old 80s Oilers guys if you weren't one of them? Because you're just going to be basically an outsider. People saw what happened to Steve Tambellini. I mean, he came in as a kind of an outsider from that. And I mean, the man didn't have any right to make any calls, is what it seemed like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's what they do. They bring in the outsider, and they're like, hey, we're bringing in an outsider, Chiarelli, McClellan. They've have history in other mm-hmm. organizations. But then now, likely, like, Shirelli's going to get the axe. And I mean, I don't necessarily think that's a bad move either, but that's because we see the results, and he's not figuring it out. So we know he's not going to, like, you know, stand up to them or what have you, but maybe
exactly.
They don't even have a chance. Because if Cates is like, hey, I'm the boss, and you got to listen to what Gretzky has to say, whether he, like, how much does Wayne Gretzky even watch hockey, like, in the NHL? I don't know. Like, he went through a period of a couple years of being like, I just want to, like, take a break from the game, and I want to enjoy life. So it's like, if you missed, like, 2 years of scouting and paying attention to players in the NHL and young players, then, like, what are you offering there? Like, me and you have more knowledge because we're paying attention every year. We're not taking breaks from hockey. And so,
absolutely.
But, yeah, coming to Chiarelli and, like, the kind of playoff race right now. So, you know, on January 20th here, the Oilers are fifth in the wild card race, although, you know, they're just 2 points behind Minnesota. They have, so Oilers have 49 points and Minnesota has 51. There's a kind of a rat race going on here with about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams or so, maybe 7 if you can count St. Louis. I think Arizona, you know, probably is out. Yep. But yeah, like, and the Oilers, like, they really need to get hot here. Right now they're like 5-5 in their last 10, and they just continue to tread water, and like, their goal differential is minus 15. So, as you say, like, if they make the playoffs, will they, like, have what it takes to go up against the San Jose's and the Nashville's and the Vegas's, etc.? I'm not so sure. So I think, thinking that, like, you know, and having Chiarelli in the job that he's in, and even the moves he's made this year, and I mentioned this in a pod the other day to JD, like, even the moves he's made this year have, like, actively made the team worse. Like, Strome was literally doing nothing. And so you trade him for Spooner, who's just getting scratched. Like, at least, like, Strome is skating around on the ice, you know? Like, he's actually getting paid to play hockey. Like, I guess that's our bar now, right? But, and, like, Petro, like, Manning. Like, why do you got to bring Manning in? He's on contract for next year, too. He's getting scratched. Like, what the hell? And Petrovic doesn't seem like he's a super fast guy. I got to watch more of him. But Chiarelli already this year, like, the longer that he's in the position, and again, maybe it's the whole collaborative brain trust, because it sounds like they've been wanting to get Petrovic for a few years. But it comes back to Petrovic's a hometown boy. So is that, like, played into getting Petrovic? Like, we're in desperate times here, and they're going back to the Edmonton, good old Edmonton boy. Well,
yeah, and the moves, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, the recent barrage of moves Chiarelli has made have absolutely actively made, I think, the team worse. You can say, let's say, not by a lot.
Because there wasn't much to lose to begin with. That's why not by
a lot. Yeah, there wasn't much to lose. He wasn't really giving up, let's say, you know, a massive talent for these guys as he has done in the past. But yeah, he's absolutely still, like, moved the stick back, I think. I mean, all these moves he's made, none of these guys are even cracking the lineup, which is then it makes you wonder, like, what did you just add all this additional salary for on a team that's already, you know, right there at the cap? What was the reason for this? The Manning trade is just a complete head scratcher. I mean, on the one hand, like, if you look at the business side of things, I mean, you know, you've hitched your wagon now to a guy who's got another 2.25 million owed to him next year. And also then from a hockey, you know, operational standpoint, you've just added a guy that, you know, had a bit of controversy with your superstar. Like, is this really, like, optically what you want to be doing?
Exactly. And it's, but, like, I mean, you ask, he's like, oh, I asked Connor about it before and he said it'd be great. Like, is there any player that you'd ask Connor, being the pro that he is, that he's gonna, like, want to complain and be like, no, I don't want that guy on my team? Like, he's a leader. He's going to take whoever you want, but he might not say it, but, you know, in the background, at back of his mind, he's like, is this necessary? It's not like this guy is, like, moving the needle in any way. If anything, it's a bad move. It's a hindrance because of the cap hit.
100%, 100% it is. And I mean, you make a good point to that. I mean, that's the thing. Connor has been the, you know, ultimate professional. You know, I feel like there was a, when the news broke that Manning was acquired, you know, the news and the bloggers out there could have been a lot of stuff written about, you know, the tension that might be in the room. But Connor was very quick to, like, put that to rest. And I mean, he's the ultimate professional when it comes to that. I mean, he's been trained how to answer questions and how to get act in these situations from a very early age, and he continues to do that. But yeah, I mean, just my whole thought is you as a general manager, why would you even put your superstar in that position?
Yeah.
Like, if this is the guy that you're trying to build your team around, and this is the guy that you need to, like, protect, why would you even think that this is a situation to put your superstar into? And then that just goes to the whole, like, sign. I mean, you could just see the moves that these Chiarelli's made. He's literally just trying to throw a dart at a board and blind and hope it hits a bullseye. Like, that's there's no real, it doesn't seem there's any real calculation to any of these moves he's making. He's just literally knows he's kind of in a desperate state, wants to try and hit some kind of a home run that works to maybe deflect some of the negative attention away from himself. And yeah, at the end of the day, I think he understands that his employment, it kind of hinges on the Oilers making the playoffs. But
But it's just like I don't understand, like from Cates and Nicholson and the quote unquote Oilers brain trust. Like, if you want a guy in the slot who's making like panic maneuvers trying to save his job, like
no,
he makes the playoffs
you
and then say we get
definitely
swept in the
don't.
first round. Like, is it like, oh, he it was the one who got us there, but then you give up a first round pick that could be potentially top 10, top 15 pick, which is like a game changer if you pick right, you know, and to just like right now they're talking about trading him and Puljujarvi and whatever young player, and it's like do we want this guy continuing to be making the moves, like, and like the track record just keeps getting like worse and worse. If it's one thing, like I think all Oilers fans can agree, let's trade the first round pick. What do we need another 18-year-old for? Fine. But like if you're not getting a legitimate asset back, like a player that can make an impact, then you know, I don't think it should be done, right? Like you just shouldn't just do it for the sake of doing it. And I think having
Absolutely.
Chiarelli in the spot, like right now they're gonna be on that 7-day, 10-day, you know, break. Like I think they need to like get rid of him. I agree that they need to, but unfortunately, like they won't get rid of the boys in the bus. Like we can't even talk about that because we just know it's a non-starter. So why waste our breath, right? But
But I agree with you on that. I mean, that's the thing. If you as an owner or you as a brain trust, know that, let's say, oh, this guy won't be around if we don't make the playoffs, which is already at this point, if you make the playoffs, it's you kind of squeaking in there by the just by the hair on your chin, right? I mean, that's literally at this point where the Oilers are. You know, if you already know that, is this truly then the guy that is it worth keeping him around still at this point? I mean, you should absolutely just at this point get rid of him if that's the faith you have in him, if that's the faith that you're giving him is. Yeah, squeak in and maybe you'll keep your job. Well, you know, that's not how any sports franchise should be run. I mean, you're not just trying to get into the playoffs this year. I mean, this when you've got a player like Connor McDavid, I mean, you need to be able to like constantly be competitive. You should be a contender at this point because you literally have a piece that nobody else has. Building around that should it should be easier at this point because you've already been given the golden ticket. My issue then is like, is this guy, should Chiarelli still be there? And absolutely, he should not.
I think so. And it's like the guy is already like we know that his negotiating like hand, he's not good, right? Like he doesn't get a better asset back or a better deal back in return. So throw on top of the fact that everyone and their mother knows that this guy is desperate. And so other GMs are probably looking to, you know, poach this guy. Like,
Absolutely.
are the Leafs going to be like, oh, your first round pick for Andreas Johnsson, like just some guy that they found out of nowhere. And then we're going to think, oh, he's got skill. I mean, I don't necessarily think he's a bad player, but to give up your first round pick for that, you got to get a guy like that's going to make an impact like Jeff Skinner on Eichel's line. You know what I mean? Like,
Exactly. Yep.
instantly going to like add to be like, you know, one of our top four forwards, right? And it's just, I just don't think he can do it,
I
right?
agree with you 100%. No, and that's the thing. I think his track record has shown with trades that he it's I mean, I don't he just never seems to get fair value back or we the Oilers are always on the losing end of a trade. And is this really then the guy that you want dealing a first round pick or you know a player like Jesse Puljujärvi? I mean, the kid is still so raw, still so young, but he was a fourth overall pick. And is this really the guy you want dealing from a position of weakness? I mean, I just it does to me it doesn't make any sense. And it's like he's just said right now. I mean, every GM in the league knows if they're going to make a deal with Chiarelli, they're gonna take him to the cleaners because he's dealing from a point of desperation. He's not dealing for the future. He's dealing to save his job. And at that point, you know, I mean. Sure, I mean, getting a Michael Ferland would be great. Getting a Zuccarello would be great. But I mean, at what cost? Are you giving up a first round pick for one of these
For 3
guys?
months to just eke in
Yeah.
barely, right? Like, and who knows? Maybe like the risk with him is gonna get a Zuccarello, and then like sign him to like a 6-year, $6 million deal or some shit, you know, like
with a no movement clause.
Yeah, exactly. So I think like I've said this before that like some of the drafting that's happened with Chiarelli, like in the later rounds, I mean, it's the jury's still out even on his first round picks, right? With Puljujarvi and Yamamoto and Bouchard. I mean, Yamamoto, we can't say that, you know, that they're, any of them haven't made an impact yet, but at least some of the second, third, fourth round picks actually like increase their prospect stock a few times with a Caleb Jones or, you know, Ethan Bear or whatever, Tyler Benson. Although, you know, there's obviously other picks that we could have debated. You know, DeBrincat seems like a guy would have been a no-brainer having the chemistry with McDavid. Yeah. But anyways, so
absolutely,
he's been
okay
on the draft floor. But again, that's maybe the scouts that are doing the job. So, and right now, like, he's
just
going from the trade well. And yeah, I'm pretty concerned as an Oilers fan that, you know, he's still at the helm. But at the same time, like, with Todd McClellan, I was like, we need to get this guy moved and then see, you know, stick with the same lines, develop some chemistry, change some things. And granted, I think Klefbom getting injured is a huge loss.
It was a huge hole, for sure. It's created
well
a massive
be, like,
hole.
Totally mm-hmm. different if he was still healthy. But the change I was hoping for with McClellan, we're kind of right back where we started. And I fear that with Chiarelli and, you know, given the brain trust that we talked above him, if they bring somebody else into that role, I'm not so sure that, like, things are going to automatically improve either, right? And you might not even get that boost on the ice because it's the guy, you know, up in the rafters. So,
totally.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think it's a move that should be made, and I don't think we should have Chiarelli in the panic position. But even then, I don't know if it's going to, you know, put us in the position that we need to become that contender for Connor.
No, and that's just it. To make trades to squeak into a playoff for either a, you know, a 5-game elimination or a 4-game elimination, it doesn't make sense. And also to have a guy dealing from an absolute position of desperation to save his job is also, it doesn't make sense to have that guy now dealing with these kinds of high profile, you know, assets of yours, because I mean, yeah, that first round pick is an asset. Do you really want the guy who's literally trying to salvage his position here dealing that from a position of complete weakness? Absolutely not.
Yeah, he's already like is kind of like a weak negotiator, and you're putting him in a position of weakness. And yeah, like I think I'm all for the first round pick. You know my feelings on Jesse Puljujarvi. I think like it's way too early to, you know, say who
I agree.
He is and. You know, as you know, I can wax poetic about Puljujarvi, but just see, looking like last night, the guy needs to play with the puck on his stick. And I just feel like the other players on the team don't necessarily give it to him in those spots when a pass is available. And like that,
yeah,
that
I mean,
pass
watching
that,
yeah.
the Nuge goal, right? The pass that Nuge
yeah,
gave
it was,
to
it
him
was a nice pass.
Was in
yeah.
a tight spot. Usually he wouldn't give that pass to Puljujarvi. But Puljujarvi was able to use his speed, and he was able to gain the zone. Like, they need to utilize him better. Like, to trade him now with his value, once again, asset management for Oilers at a complete low is a mistake. But at least the first-round pick
100%.
At this stage, you can't devalue that. If anything, like, their position in the standings actually increases the value. So the first-round pick makes all kinds of sense for me to trade. But the assets that they have in their hands, they've devalued already. Yeah. So don't trade those, you know?
No, I agree. And again, I mean, the first round pick, I totally agree with you. I think it's something that's definitely tradable. But again, it's what are we getting back for it? I think that's the part where everyone as a fan for the Oilers is scared about is he going to give this away for a 30-year-old 3-month rental? Like, is that the plan here? Because if that's the plan, that's it doesn't make a lot of sense. To do that, I mean, a guy like Zuccarello would be great, but is Zuccarello going to put us over the top to win us around? I don't see it. But I mean, is he a great addition? Absolutely, he would be. But at the cost of a first round pick, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah,
but...
I think it's too steep for a Zuccarello. Like, I think it's got to be for a guy like a, you know, in a deal, in a package deal for you know, Pietrangelo, who you're going to re-sign. Obviously, like, you know, we talk about the salary cap issues and whatnot as well, but it's got to be that kind of guy, like, who's going to be a core piece, and his age is around like 24, 25, who can bring offense, you know, can contribute, whether it's a winger or a, you know, defenseman. it's got to be a core piece going into the future, like a rental for like for a first round pick that could be in the lottery. Like that's like so much steeper than ever is paid, right? I mean, obviously there's exceptions.
Sure. No, I absolutely agree.
The teams that are paying for rentals for first round picks are teams that are like literally like have a shot to win the cup, like a Nashville, a San Jose, whatever, like an actual top team right now. So just to eke into the playoffs, yeah, that's like really scary. And I think as Oilers fans,
we
sort of, you know, we're looking at the trade deadline as the next kind of step here. And we hope that, you know, hopefully there's some changes in management, or honestly at this stage, like if there's no changes in management, I'd almost rather we just stand pat because clearly the team is what it is, what we have. And, you know, maybe after the lottery, if it's a higher pick, then if we win the lottery, get a third pick, for example, then the value is even higher to make a trade in the offseason for a key piece. Like, I prefer they trade it now, 100%. But with a manager, you know, who's competent, right? Like, so...
Yeah, 100%.
So, yeah, thanks for joining, Sanj, on this call. It was great to talk about the Oilers with you, and I think it's just the beginning
of
you know, our podcasting. Definitely be checking in as it leads up to the trade deadline. And, yeah,
for sure.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
Thank you.
Take it easy.
All right, take care. Okay. Bye-bye.
Welcome to the Friends with Opinions podcast, episode 14. Of course, today we'll be covering the breaking news for the Edmonton Oilers, Peter Chiarelli being let go and fired as president and GM of the Edmonton Oilers. And I have on today Sean Mann, my good friend, childhood friend from Edmonton, a lifelong diehard Edmonton Oilers fan. And we're going to get into the wake of the firing and what it means for the Oilers going to the future. And thanks for listening.